Hello, and welcome to our At Any Rate Emerging Markets Focus podcast, a place for us to discuss recent developments and key issues of focus in the emerging market fixed income asset class. I'm Johnny Goulden from the Emerging Market Strategy team here at JP Morgan, and I'm joined by Saad Siddiqui, also from our Emerging Market Strategy team. Saad, thanks for joining.
Hi, good to be here.
So last week, we talked about what we were assessing in terms of EM fundamentals, valuations, and technicals to assess our next step, given we've essentially stepped aside to a very neutral stance across much of EM from a top-down perspective and sort of looking at when re-entry points are. Given that means that we're being very data or level dependent ourselves, we should probably discuss what has changed around all of that in the last week. So, Saad, let's start with the implications for EM assets from the latest fundamental and particularly growth data. There are some hints that peak US exceptionalism, if we call it that, has passed for markets for now. We've had a Q1 GDP print in the US, which was a bit to the downside. Some other signs in the US of activity and sentiment softening, and maybe payrolls print today was part of that as well. And at the same time, we've had Europe, Asia, rest of the world actually doing a bit better in terms of growth. So is that a theme, do you think, we should be trading in emerging markets?
So I think one has to really drill down into different components of emerging markets, you know, whether it's on the fixed income side and FX and rates and credit in terms of its drivers, because I think there is a little bit of differentiation taking place on in terms of what are the most important and pertinent fundamental forces driving different bits of the asset class. I think at a top-down level, the fact that global growth is looking overall reasonably in good shape, a little bit of a change in terms of the composition away from US into the emerging world and rest of the world. And I'd include China a little bit in that as well. You know, I think that's all else equal, a relatively healthy development. But in terms of, you know, the tier one drivers for different parts of the asset class, I think for rates and for FX, the inflation story is clearly, I think, the dominant and the primary one. And we need to have more of a resolution on that before the relevant growth drivers come into play. I guess, and this is something we'll discuss a bit more later on in this conversation, I think the growth picture, to the extent that it really reinforces the sense of a more prolonged global business cycle and a US business cycle for that matter as well, that probably does help the credit bit of the asset class more so than having a direct immediate consequence for local markets. But overall, I think it's a healthy development. And to the extent that there might have been concerns about the growth outlook at the start of the year, you know, when you had a recession in Europe, et cetera, some of those tail risk fears should be receding a bit.
Okay, great. So next part of that, I guess, focuses a bit on the Fed then. And we obviously had the FOMC this week. The message seems to be one of delayed cuts, but the bias and expectation, at least from the press conference, was still in that direction. And of course, the data may well ruin those plans. But it feels like the bar for any hikes seems very high, and the market has obviously, over the course of this week, actually started to move in the direction of pricing in a little bit more easing this week from where it had been, where it actually priced out a lot of the easing, not this week, sorry, for this year, where it actually priced out a lot of that before. So does that give us an asymmetry in EM local market risk here, in the sense that, you know, we have a Fed which is maybe pointing in a certain direction? Or does the fact that EM central banks, which have actually been very sensitive to market pricing of US rates, balance that out in the sense that they feel like they can shift in a hawkish direction the slightest signs that US rates are moving higher?
I guess one, we had a little bit of this playing out in March after the March FOMC. which at the time it was, looking dovish. The markets were rallying on the back of that. And then the CPI print came in the US and ruined that party a bit. And then the market had to then reassess the whole Fed narrative and Fed pricing. And then we got, maybe a bit of shift in terms of the commentary coming from the Fed as well. I think the market, if we were to get a green light from CPI data, could really rally quite significantly, especially after the repricing we've already seen. But I just think that investors might be a little bit weary given the recent experience that we had and wouldn't necessarily try to jump too ahead of this until the data get really, and the data that really matters here is US inflation. So I think to determine whether or not this really has the current price action, which has been quite bullish this week, obviously, how much runway that has in the near term, ultimately, I think is going to depend on what happens to inflation. So, Johnny, in addition to these fundamentals, we have been highlighting how technical factors are quite important when we think about when is the time to re-enter into EM. Fundamentally, clearly, the inflation story is going to be important. But how are you assessing the state of fundamental, of sort of technicals now, and what do they imply for our views?
This week we had our monthly EM client survey. It's always a good and useful way to cross-check some of the other technical signals that we pay attention to. For EM currencies, notable in the survey was investors reduced their exposure over the last month to what should be considered a small short. That's actually pretty consistent with our favorite EMFX risk appetite index, and favorite in the sense that we pay quite a lot of attention to it for the FX side. And that had also shown a real reduction in risk appetite in EMFX to negative and almost oversold positions over the last month or so. We had been closely following this. There is a trigger level, which is, a buy signal. We didn't quite get there 2 weeks ago. We thought we would be pretty close. Last week, it moved a bit better, and I would imagine it may do so on the back of better price action this week. But that's sort of all telling us about a picture, at least to start, that EM investors had reduced FX positions. We do have some, particularly in BRL, we have specific position in index that has shown a bit of a reduction overall in the length of BRL positions, but they're still quite high, although off the highs. On the rate side of things, looks like positions also were reduced, closer to neutral there. I think all of that on the local market side sort of feels congruent, in line with what had been a bit of a sell-off on the back of the move up in US rates after CPI. And it looks like investors have adjusted positions, and maybe we're getting a little bit of a squeeze relief rally here. In sovereign credit, actually, investors who answered our survey increased positions further, and it's now at the highest levels for 3 years. That's maybe a bit difficult to square with the inflow picture. We have not seen inflows into the asset class, continuing outflows. But perhaps because bond issuance has slowed itself, so the supply side has come down. Investors are generally quite comfortable with some of the distressed opportunities that because of that, actually the technicals are not as bad as those outflows would suggest. And actually people have been using maybe some building up of cash to increase positions further. On the flow picture, as I said, no inflows yet. We may have to wait a bit longer as Fed cuts have been pushed back for that. And I think that for us is part of the picture of how investors maybe are looking at EM and what opportunities are available elsewhere. So I'd maybe turn back a bit to how we're looking at parts of the EM fixed income universe, and like to focus just a little bit on high yielding EM local markets. So whilst we, as we've been describing, have sort of taken a step back a bit from top-down views, we have kept a bias firmly more positively on those high-yielding EM local markets. That's in frontier markets, that's in Latin America high yielders. You know, do you think that's a nice fundamentally driven part of EM to sort of hide away from just Fed watching? And that's why we're in it. Or do you worry that it gets crowded and maybe eventually is actually going to prove itself to be much higher beta?
So I would probably distinguish a little bit more idiosyncratic frontier market type views that we have, or those markets that are kind of much more, you could put them into like almost a special situations type of bucket versus, say, the Latin America liquid markets, the Brazils and the Mexicos, which are fundamentally, in our view, very sound propositions, but, you know, probably a little bit more sensitive to what's happening on to risk appetite and to the Fed. I think for those frontier markets, the sensitivity to US rates continues to be very low. I think investors are quite comfortable in those positions. And what would really shift the view on those markets is you would need a much bigger regime change for the global business cycle. So either you need to have some type of large and significant commodity price shock, or you'd need to really be talking about a much larger shift in US interest rates. You would need the sense that the US curve is unanchored and it's going to be not, we're not talking about the incremental changes in Fed rhetoric or pricing. So those, I think, are still very solid, and the bar for those frontier type markets, whether it's in Egypt, for example, or some of the you know, other markets in sub-Saharan Africa, or even Turkey, I would class as a special situation bucket right now. I think those are in a different category. When it comes to the Latin America liquid markets, they were trading with the low beta for a lot of this year, and then we had a sharp adjustment in those markets in April. So those are ones where I think you did have a lot of consensus positioning and long positions in there for good reasons, for good fundamental reasons. But when you had that large move in the repricing of the US rates curve after the CPI print, we did see some real positioning driven and volatility and price action seemed to be very different in the last few weeks compared to what we had experienced in prior months. I feel in those markets at the current juncture, positioning has been cleaned out quite a lot. The fundamental story hasn't really changed all that much. So I think on a forward-looking basis, those liquid markets look like not only are they clean in terms of positioning or cleaner in terms of positioning, but the fundamental stories are also quite attractive. So overall, I think these are still pretty attractive opportunities for investors that are a bit less sensitive to the Fed, but I would distinguish in terms of sensitivity the frontier markets versus the liquid Latin American markets. But shifting to credit now, Johnny, you know, credit spreads seem to be grinding tighter. And then when I look at what's been happening to MB Global Diversified spreads, it seems optically at least we've been widening. What's going on there?
It is just optical. And if you look over the last 1 week, it looks like MB spreads are 36 wider. Whereas, so that's EM sovereigns, whereas EM corporates, our semi-index is only 6 wider, US high yield is actually 11 tighter, and European high yield is unchanged. So it looks like you might think something quite bad happened specifically for the EM sovereign markets. Actually, it's just a mechanical remarking of the spread of the index as Venezuela was re-added to the index weight. At the end of this month, it's being phased in over 3 months, and the first came this week at the end of April. And that alone added 36 basis points at the end of April rebalancing. Without that, the MB global diversified spread is basically flat on the last week, whereas it looks about 36 wide if you include that. Obviously, Venezuela has got a very, very high spread. And so even a small weight of that increases the index quite a lot. Now, this is, as I said, optical in the sense that Venezuela is still in default and index holders will not be earning any additional carry at the moment. And actually, that's part of an ongoing point to note with the MB that the index yield and spread is generally overstating the carry earned, given the number of defaulted names which are not actively paying coupons at the moment. And there's a wedge which has sort of opened up between what it looks like you're earning and what you are actually earning in real terms. So Saad, maybe to finish, you've been on the road this week meeting EM investors. Whilst it's only a sample, and obviously can't extrapolate too much, but what is the overall vibe and consensus in terms of the way people you've met are feeling?
So that's right. This week, we have been meeting a bunch of emerging markets focused investors, and it's been good to get a finger on the pulse of where the overall sentiment is of market participants. I'll give three high-level feedback in terms of what investors have been thinking and what's top of mind. So first of all, I think that there's a general degree of hesitance about engaging in markets right now. I think investors have been facing a lot of volatility, a lot of external drivers in some of the liquid markets, the Fed, US data flow, all of that has been so dominant. And given the weak performance and the sell-off that we had through April, I think investors would like a little bit more clarity on the US inflation picture and on Fed pricing before they really look to re-engage right now. So I don't think there is a very high degree of engagement in some of the local markets, at least right now. Second high-level feedback is that I think the bias is still probably in the direction that we were describing, John, which is there is a general recognition that Latin America still looks attractive. These frontier markets are still quite attractive. Asia is a bit less attractive given the low level of interest rates there. So I think that overall regional bias is still very much intact. It's just that investors are probably looking for a bit more of a green light from the data to really pull the trigger on those types of opportunities. And the third bit of feedback, which actually for me was the most surprising and interesting, is that the degree of investor interest in frontier markets is actually quite diversified. It's diversified both in terms of the investors who are engaged in the frontier markets. It used to be the case that it was limited to a smaller degree of maybe niche or specialist type investors, but I think that the interest in frontier markets is broad-based, and also the nature of that interest is actually quite diversified. So it's not limited to just the one or two larger markets that we often discuss, say, for example, in Egypt, but there's a lot of interest in some of the Latin American and Central American frontier names. So Paraguay, Uruguay, Domrep, all of those seem to be garnering quite a bit of investor interest right now. So that seems to be where incrementally, the investor base is really finding additional opportunities.
Great. And that brings us to the end of this JP Morgan at Any Rate Emerging Markets Focused podcast. Thanks, Saad, for joining today. And thank you all for listening. And we hope to have you back again with us for the next one. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on the 3rd of May, 2024.